I invite you to take just a moment of quiet with me before God in the Spirit. Just take a moment to notice if there's anything that you need to let go of in this moment, to be able to be more fully here in this moment. And invite the Spirit, if you're willing, invite the Spirit to come, welcome, we welcome the presence of love among us this morning, within us and through us. Amen. The headlines are pretty rough these days. Some of us stop listening to the news to protect our spirits as we prepare to take action intentionally when the time is ripe. Some of us follow every detail of what is happening. Probably many of us are feeling worried for our neighbors. Some of us might feel there is so much we could be doing, where to start, or how to focus when there's so much need for spreading love and mercy and simple neighborliness. Friends, I wonder if you're experiencing some version of one of these or multiple ones of these things I've named. This morning, I hope we can take a breath together and turn our attention to these ancient stories in our sacred text and find that we have resources for meeting this moment that are deep and rich and nourishing. I hope that's something of what you find this morning. In the coming weeks and months, maybe you've heard rumor of this, but we will have opportunity to let ourselves be shaped by Luke, the book of Luke. We're going to be following the narrative lectionary. We've already started doing some of the narrative lectionary, but this way of organizing what scriptures we used, the narrative lectionary, tries to give us bigger chunks of scripture at a time, and it tries to help us get a sense of the larger sweep of the biblical story. In this case, getting a bit more full picture of the whole gospel according to Luke. Now, we've missed a whole lot already in this gospel. We've skipped a bunch of things. Jesus' baptism, we haven't really dealt with. Genealogy of Jesus, the temptations in the wilderness, and what is known as his inaugural sermon in his hometown of Nazareth, in the synagogue there. So that's some of what has come before this story that we're getting today. And we also skipped the famous story of the person who is paralyzed being carried by his four friends on a gurney, and then they come through the roof to try to get to Jesus. Well, they do get to Jesus. And then in that story, this is relevant to today's text. In that story, Jesus offers that man forgiveness. And that's super controversial in that moment. People are not kind of like, who is this person? What is he doing trying to forgive sins? And right before our text for today in chapter 5, Jesus is criticized for eating with tax collectors and sinners, people who are kind of social outcasts. And he replies with something along the lines of, listen, I didn't come for people who are already well. I've come for those who need healing and a change of heart. And then in response to a question about why his disciples don't fast, like John's disciples, for example, Jesus calls himself a bridegroom and says it's inappropriate for wedding guests to fast when they are with the groom. And we will miss the Sermon on the Plain, which is Luke's parallel to Matthew's Sermon on the Mount. And that comes directly after today's text, right after Jesus calls the 12 apostles. So I say this as just an orientation and an invitation. Maybe you'll want to read some of these other parts on your own. I think Luke is great. If you start reading and you don't agree with me, I would love to chat about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Today, in the beginning of Luke 6, we have a controversy about how best to keep the Sabbath. As a day set apart, how to honor this sacred gift from the Creator of a day set aside for rest. At first glance, we might think this doesn't have a lot to do with us. Maybe this is an argument that's more in-house among Jewish folks. But the more time I've spent with this passage, the more I see there's really a lot of wisdom for us here. First, let's not underestimate the importance of the Sabbath, then or now, especially in the Jewish community, but I think for all of us who claim the Abrahamic faiths. And I just want to give props to Dr. Amy Robinson of the Bible Worm podcast because her perspective was extremely helpful. Keeping the Sabbath day, observing a day of resting from work, as commanded by God to Moses on Mount Sinai. Yes, you'll remember this is part of the Ten Commandments. This practice was a central identity marker for Jewish people, for the Jewish community, then in the first century, and it is now today as well. Now, you probably remember that the concept of the Sabbath comes from the story of creation in Genesis 1, when on the seventh day, the Creator rests from all the work of creating the cosmos. But something you might not have thought, I hadn't thought about, is you remember that on the afternoon of the sixth day is when humankind is created. So that means that humankind's first experience of creation is rest. What does that mean? Humankind's original state of being is one of rest, of spacious time to enjoy the beautiful world God has made. The beautiful world that God breathes into being moment by moment. And out of that pause, from that time in which we remember that the world keeps going without our effort, from those hours of savoring ease and beauty, from that experience of belonging to the divine life and belonging to and with the rest of creation, out of that experience of Sabbath, we do our work. This seems really different from a lot of things. A lot of times we assume that, well, work is what we do, and then we get a break, or we maybe earn our rest. But actually, this is suggesting something very different. So this deep identity marker, Jesus knows and has been steeped in how crucial, important, and central this is. So he's knowingly messing with a spiritual practice that has held his community together and held his people together in a time of pressure from Rome and other cultural influences that threatened to dilute the self-understanding and their cohesion as a people. This practice reminded the people who they are, that they were a people kept by God, even amid political powers that wanted to tell them otherwise. People then and now organize their lives around keeping the Sabbath. People plan their work week knowing, well, their whole week, knowing that they are going to stop working on that day. It's a day set apart and fundamentally understood as fundamentally different from other days. Now, in saying that it's permissible for the disciples to pluck heads of wheat on the Sabbath, Jesus is not saying, who cares about the Sabbath? Whatever, just do what you want. Rather, in the story that follows, he's challenging his peers, and he's saying that he's choosing to keep the Sabbath differently, or maybe that it's possible to still keep the Sabbath, but to do it differently. Out of all the ways that Jesus could have responded to the Pharisees' concerns or to these particular Pharisees, Jesus chooses to pull in this somewhat obscure story from David. But what's maybe most significant here is that when that story of David occurs, David was not yet king. Saul was still king of Israel, and David had been anointed by the prophet Samuel. So he carried some authority, but most people didn't know that yet. So they were kind of, no one really knew that he was claiming this authority or that he had that. So when he comes in asking the priest for bread and leaving with the consecrated bread of the presence, this actually did create a bit of a scandal even for David. But Jesus is saying that it was allowable for David to eat the consecrated bread because he and his companions were hungry, there was human need, and after all, he was David, soon to be king. So Jesus goes far beyond the fact that in Jewish law, it's okay to pluck food from your neighbor's field if you're hungry, not to use tools to harvest it, but to take some with your hands. So Jesus is not arguing with his critics on their own terms, although he certainly could have. Jesus is clearly claiming authority and special status, and that's making people pretty mad. Luke seems to be drawing the parallel that, like David, Jesus is God's anointed one, the Messiah. And so he has the authority to reimagine how to honor the Sabbath. But again, no one really knows this about him yet. You might have heard of the idea in Judaism of placing a hedge or a fence around the Torah, the instructions from God to the people. Rabbis had created specific ways to keep the Torah, to observe the law, so that people wouldn't accidentally fail to honor divine commandments. By contrast, it seems Jesus is trying to expand the Torah rather than protect people from breaking it. Just as in Luke 4, he's telling his home community that the covenant of God is more expansive than they imagine, wider than they assume, that it's not just for one people, but for all people. Jesus here is offering what might be a more life-giving way of keeping the Sabbath, of honoring the Sabbath. Just a word about the Pharisees. I feel like we sort of love to hate the Pharisees. But they themselves were a reform movement, and you probably know that, but even though they're often in conflict with Jesus, we really would do well not to dismiss them as like the bad guys. These are real conversations that Jesus is having with other leaders, other contemporaries in his time. And obviously, they're doing things in very different ways, but they all want their people to survive and thrive, to worship God and to be faithful. It might also help us to note that this is some of the Pharisees, and other Pharisees might have viewed Jesus' actions differently. In the second story, in the case of the person without the use of their right hand, did Jesus actually break the Sabbath? Sort of a question, because miraculous healing was not explicitly prohibited, actually. But you can see why they're mad. He's certainly trying to make a point. Jesus is arguing that showing mercy is actually a way of keeping the Sabbath. It's always the right time to show mercy, Jesus is saying. And maybe especially on a day that is set apart. It's always the right time to save life rather than destroy it, to do good and not harm. After all, the Sabbath day is not a punishment, but a gift, a blessing from God. So, if the Sabbath is intended for human flourishing, restoring someone's non-functional hand to wholeness can be a part of observing the Sabbath. And yet, this is a hard word, because part of the Sabbath day's significance is that there is one day each week when we are not trying to repair the world, but are simply being, enjoying, tending to ourselves, body and soul, leaving the world in God's hands for that day, and receiving the gift of ceasing from doing. And all through those many centuries, people recognized the value of that of stopping and of noticing, oh, things are actually going on without my effort. God models resting and stepping back and taking pleasure in the goodness that is in the world. God looks at the world and says, it is very good. And these particular Pharisees might say, we have done our best to keep this gift God gave us alive and well in our communities by creating specific ways to stop working and keep the Sabbath rest commanded by God. We're just trying to preserve the heartbeat of our people. But if we take Jesus to be saying that it's always a good time to show mercy, always a good time to participate in healing, I do not see him saying that we should never stop working. I don't think we can immediately draw that from what he's doing. I don't think he's saying we should just work harder and do more and not rest. That would be death to hardworking Mennonites. I like, don't ever want, don't hear that. That's not the message. In fact, right after these controversies, Jesus withdraws up on a mountain to commune with the Holy One through the night. Jesus does this as a habit in Luke. At key moments throughout the book of Luke, Jesus takes time away from his work of healing, of teaching, of sharing meals with all kinds of folk. Time apart to tend to his own spirit and to tend to his relationship with God. And out of this time of quiet and solitude and extended prayer, Jesus calls close to him 12 apostles, which just means ones who are sent. If he's going to be creating controversy and stirring up lots of questions and making powerful people angry, Jesus knows he's going to need some companionship, friends who will stick close and take some of the heat with him. Now, maybe for you who are retired, it's easier to block out time that is just for resting. Time for enjoying the goodness of creation, for rest and restorative activities. But I don't assume that it's easier for you. We all get messages in our culture about productivity being the measure of our worth. And then some of us have an overdeveloped work ethic and an overdeveloped sense of responsibility to make things right in the world that is just added on top of the cultural messages. So really, in our context, the radical and controversial act is to stop working, is to stop trying so hard, to maybe relax our vigilance a little, long enough to tend to our inner life, to stop long enough to tend to our own connection with the divine, to take the time to rest in God, to rest, just to relax into God, and to be strengthened and restored so that we can work for justice and human flourishing, and to get grounded enough to have the wherewithal to discern what is our good work to do. What is ours? What is our part? Even discerning that day by day or hour by hour. But not to make that work, that discernment, even its own work. It's hard for us to let go in that way, I think. I think it's hard for all of us. So if you'll permit me just one more Hafiz poem. I'm not saying this is the last one. It's only 3 lines. But it just so happened that I have this year with Hafiz book, so it's every day there's a poem. And it just so happened that yesterday's was this one. One regret, dear world, that I am determined not to have. when I am lying on my deathbed is that I did not kiss you enough. Is it not a radical act to take plenty of time to kiss this world, which I take to mean enjoy, love without fixing? In these times, we can expend a lot of our energy being outraged or despairing, and it is important to make space for lament. It is important to make space for lament. And what if we allowed ourselves to step back from headlines and conserve our energy for the time when we will need to act? The time when we will need to show up on behalf of our neighbors. And this will look different for different people. But can we set aside time to allow the energy we might have used up on being horrified or angry or grieved? And you can still be those things, but maybe some of your energy can go into grounding us, letting that energy move down to nourish our roots. The Spirit invites us to live in such a way that our work grows out of our experiences of creation's goodness, from the grounded, rested posture of our Creator, who stopped working to take pleasure in the beauty of what they made. So, how will you kiss the world this week? How will you receive the gift of the Sabbath? The blessing of releasing all we have not yet made right into the arms of love, always at work to bring well-being to all the world. How might you allow yourself the gift of deep rest? How might you receive mercy so that you also can spread mercy with a joyful and generous heart?